February 24th to order. At this time, I ask the secretary to take the meeting.
I move for approval.
I'll second that.
Well, I think that there is an, there may be an error.
Is there? Okay.
Okay, we'll just put this off until the next meeting then. Okay. Mr. Castro either came in late or was absent. We can't establish which it was. And it indicates on here that he was absent, but that he voted for an item. Yeah. So we'll fix it.
And with that,
I'd like to, all those in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? 5-0 for approval. All right, where am I? Okay, item E, or D, modification of the agenda. Items on the agenda may be taken out of order. The public body may combine two or more agenda items for consideration, and the public body may remove an item from the agenda or delay discussion relating to an item on the agenda at any time. We will be considering items F1A and F2B as one item. We will vote on them separately, but we'll have the discussion as a single item. Are there any other modifications?
No.
Okay. Disclosures. Any member of the commission may wish to explain any contact with an applicant or the public regarding an item on the agenda or business of the commission. Are there any disclosures? Mr. Sattler.
Yes. I'd just like to make it known, I brought it up at the end of the last meeting, that Tom Keating is my wife's cousin, and we've known Tom and Martha for about 40 years. But it's just, that's the relationship.
Okay.
I have nothing involved or anything with any of this. So.
Okay.
I was told at the last meeting it was probably okay, but I just wanted to bring it up here at this time as well.
That's correct. There's nothing involved in that relationship that would cause you to be required to abstain from any consideration of that matter.
Thank you.
Let the record show that Mr. Castro has arrived. At this time, we will take up public hearings, and we will consider both items. F1A, Master Plan Amendment 15-162, to adopt a resolution recommending to the Board of Supervisors approval of a master plan amendment from Blackstone Development Group, property owners MTK Properties, LLC, Arrays Family Trust, and Tom and Martha Keating Family Trust, to create a new specific plan area for the north portion of the existing Lompa Ranch specific plan area, on property located on the north side of East 5th Street between Salomon Road and Airport Road, APNs 010-041-16-38-52-70-71 and -73. And item F2B, a zoning amendment, to recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of a zoning map amendment from Blackstone Development Group, property owners MTK Properties, LLC, Arrays Family Trust, and Tom and Martha Keating Family Trust, to change the zoning from single-family, one-acre, SF1A, and agriculture, to single-family, 6,000, SF6, multifamily duplex, MFD, multifamily apartment, MFA, neighborhood business, NB, and general commercial, GC, on property located on the north side of East 5th Street between Salomon Road and Airport Road, APN 010-041-16-38-52-70-71-73. At this time, Ms. Pansky will give a brief introduction, and we will hear a detailed description of the project from the applicant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Susan Dorpansky, Planning Manager. So this specific plan is being proposed on the north parcels of the current Lompa Ranch specific plan area that are shown on the aerial that I have up on the screen. They're about 250 acres total. The current Lompa Ranch specific plan encompasses parcels that are extending to the south, south of 5th Street. The entire area is included in the blue dashed line that you see on the screen now. In the introduction of the item, we didn't put specifically what the land use designations are currently and what they're being proposed to be. The applicant's representative is going to go into that in detail, but I am going to just note for the record what they are. So right now, the area that is being considered for a new specific plan, the current land use designations are neighborhood commercial, mixed-use residential, mixed-use commercial, mixed-use employment, and open space. And the applicant is proposing a new specific plan area to change the designations to medium-density residential, high-density residential, mixed-use residential, neighborhood commercial, mixed-use commercial, and open space. And the area specifically that we're talking about today, again, is north of 5th Street between Solomon Road and Airport Road. Now, in our current master plan that was adopted in 2006, this area is subject to a specific plan, which is on the screen now. The specific plan envisioned that at some point in the future, the Lompa Ranch properties would be developed, but at the time, development plans weren't known. So we kind of put placeholders in the land use designations in this area. And we put a policy in place that anyone that was to come forward to develop this property would be required to put a new specific plan in place to designate the land use designations that they wanted, and also to address all the policies that are currently listed in the specific plan area. And those are detailed in the staff reports. I'm not going to go into them in detail now, but if you have questions on them after the applicant's presentation, I'd be happy to answer them. So we had a developer come forward. They are here today with a new specific plan as required by our current master plan. I'd like to note that in addition to the 2006 master plan, the 1996 master plan also envisioned residential units for the Lompa Ranch property at a range of 1,800 to 2,400. So for many, many years, we've anticipated that there would be development of a significant nature on these parcels. That, I think, is going to wrap up my presentation, and I'm going to turn it over to Mike Raley from Rubicon Design Group. He's the applicant's representative. But I also would like to note that from city's side, in addition to myself and the director, Lee Plemmel, we have Danny Rotter, the engineering manager, Vern Cron, park planner, and Bob Shrehans, the fire chief, to answer questions about the specific plan area and the text that's being proposed. You'll note in the staff report that staff has provided redlined documents with additional text revisions that we would like to see, and those are for your consideration, and we're recommending that those changes be adopted as a part of this specific plan, along with the zoning that the applicant's proposing. Current zoning is agriculture and single family 1 acre. You had already read what the new zoning is proposed to be, but essentially it's in line with the land use designations that are being proposed. One other thing to note, there is a change that we're proposing in the document on pages 52 and 53. This is in chapter 3. Item D on page 52, the last red line sentence should read, water and sewer technical reports shall include analysis of downstream slash offsite capacities. And then on page 53, item D as well, same thing, last sentence, water and sewer technical reports shall include analysis of downstream slash offsite capacities. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Mr. Raley, would you like to come forward?
Good evening. For the record, Mike Raley with Rubicon Design Group. I represent Blackstone Development Group, the master developer for the project. Get my PowerPoint here. I've already skipped over. I won't go into too much detail. Susan did a great job explaining where the property is located, generally east of Solomon, west of Airport Road, north of Fifth Street, about 251 total acres. As many of you know, the Lompa Ranch was a cattle and sheep ranch that dated back to the 1930s. However, there's been some fundamental changes in the area, as we all know, the extension of the freeway. And then really, most recently, and I think a very significant, we all know that the Lompa Ranch is subject to flooding and has flood issues. We are currently in the process of a LOMAR, letter of map revision, with FEMA. That analysis has been done, the drainage improvements, the engineering work has been done, the city has reviewed those, given their blessing, so to speak, and that has been submitted to FEMA. We expect an approval from FEMA within the next 30 to 60 days, which would remove the property from the floodway. And then as projects are brought forward, we would do CLOMARs, which are conditional letters of map revision, with FEMA to remove those from the floodplain, show the engineering analysis, how the drainage will work, and that sort of thing. And that's really not only a benefit to the Lompa Ranch, but will benefit a lot of the surrounding properties. I know when we initially met with the school district, there's some flooding issues adjacent to the high school that they're concerned with. This hopefully will solve a lot of those problems as well. This mouse is very touchy. I apologize. As Susan mentioned, the master plan actually establishes the framework for what we are doing here tonight. And in fact, if you look at the document that was submitted, it essentially kind of follows those policies in the master plan. So we feel that we let the master plan establish the backbone framework for the document that you're reviewing tonight. This has been a fairly lengthy process to get where we are tonight. We've had several meetings with city staff, and that includes multiple departments. We've met, obviously, over the course of several months with the planning department. We've worked closely with the Parks Department. We've met with school district staff. Our engineers have worked with Engineering and Public Works. We've had meetings with the Fire Department. We've also presented this project to the Parks and Recreation Commission and received unanimous approval. And I would like to say that I'd like to thank staff. Has been wonderful to work with. They've really been a huge help for us in getting through the process, especially Susan and Lee, Vern with Parks, and Mark with the school district have all been wonderful to work with, so we greatly appreciate that. This is our proposed land use plan. And if you really look at what we're proposing now compared to what's in the existing master plan, there's not a whole lot of deviation. I think it's really more of a narrowing down. But if you look at what unit yields would be and that sort of thing, it's very similar to what could be done under the existing master plan designations that are there now. And what it provides for is really kind of a range of residential densities, anywhere from single-family lots up to multifamily units, perhaps some duplexes. Some commercial, especially on the north side. We've reserved 10 acres for an elementary school site. And working with the school district, that will kind of has the ability to float around within the plan depending on where they see the best fit and the need. Most likely try to collate that with a park, for example, so you'd have some joint use of facilities. But that's included in the plan. And then obviously a significant amount of open space as well. The zoning, as Susan mentioned, currently is mostly agricultural zoning. This shows the zoning designations that we're proposing. And if you look, they generally match or complement the existing designations of the surrounding properties. For example, east of the freeway, if you look, we have MFA on a large portion, which adjoins MFA, as well as SF6, which adjoins SF6. Same thing along Salomon. We have SF6, which adjoins SF6. So we've tried to kind of match the surrounding zoning patterns to provide for a proper transition. Well, it was super simple. There it goes. So this is really the first step in the overall process. What we're doing here is establishing our underlying land use. At this point, we don't have a specific project yet to move forward. We're not applying for a tentative map. This is simply to give us the ability to do that. So knowing that the development is coming, the report that you have in the specific plan includes an impact analysis and infrastructure section, which is Chapter 3. We did do a traffic impact analysis. Water and sewer standards are included, drainage standards. We've met with schools, met with the fire department. You'll see some standards in there in terms of an impact fee that's going to be put on to every unit in Lompa Ranch that will go towards fire department facilities. So we've agreed to all that and worked that out with the various departments. And I think it's important to stress that this is simply the first step in the process. There is a future future development process, whether it be tentative map, special use permit, that sort of thing, project specific. And the specific plan establishes triggers and mechanisms to make sure that all the proper engineering and studies, traffic analysis, all that is in place once we know exactly what's being built. We've kind of done the analysis of the worst case scenario, and we've put the triggers in there and the milestones that will trigger those improvements and that sort of thing, so everything is accounted for once the development really starts rolling, so to speak. Just a few highlights. We're planning for a very diverse residential offerings, kind of that would appeal to a wide demographic of the market, anywhere from a first-time home buyer to retirees to families, you name it. We hope to have a product that appeals to everyone. This really does serve to complete the gaps in the trails and open space plan. If you look at the parks map, this is kind of the donut hole that's been left. There's the connectivity, for example, between the east side of the freeway, the west side of the freeway that doesn't exist now. This will finish that off. It also will provide for park facilities on the both the east and west side of the freeway. For example, on the east side of the freeway, if you look at the city's own kind of formula for calculating park demands, they need a park over there now. This project will provide for that. We're also proposing a 10-acre community park on the west side, and all that will be linked together with a comprehensive trail system. I think an important thing is the connection from the west side to the east side. If you have a high schooler that lives on the east side, he will now literally be able to ride his bike all the way to the high school without going on the major streets, which I think is a huge community benefit. Once again, mixed use with the ability to have some commercial uses mixed in with the project. And the standards that we've included in the specific plan, for the most part, exceed minimum code requirements. We have increased architectural standards, increased landscaping standards, buffering standards, all that will set this above and beyond and provide for a quality project. This kind of gives you an idea of the housing mix that's envisioned. Like I said, it's a little bit of everything, from single-family detached to some single-family attached products, apartments, perhaps some condominiums, townhomes, that sort of thing. So this kind of gives you an idea of the envisioned uses within the residential portions of the project. Once again, a comprehensive trail and open space network. We have requirements that basically all the neighborhoods have to have linkages to the primary trail system, which will connect to all the facilities. It'll connect up to the high school, connect to the parks, really to encourage people to get out and walk, not drive to the park, but walk from their neighborhood to the park because they'll have a nice, safe path to get there. Like I said, we've worked closely with the Parks Department. We will have a 10-acre community park on the west side and a 3-acre neighborhood park on the east side. After meeting with the Parks and Recreation Commission, there was a request for a dog park. We've included that in our standards that there will be a dog park. Whether that's incorporated into the community park or into one of the detention basins that we're planning as a joint use facility, I think would work well. But that's definitely going to be a component of the plan. Bark Park, as we call it. Commercial and mixed use, we have architectural standards, roof, all the way from roof lines to screening to lighting that are included in the plan. Potential for mixed use where you might have residential mixed in with perhaps some office mixed in with commercial. So I think it could be a very exciting project. And then low intensity commercial uses. For example, on the east side, we're looking at potentially having some mini storage uses. Kind of as you get close down towards the sewer plant. I think that would be a good transition from the corporate yard and whatnot up as you move into residential areas. We think the plan really does promote infill development. This is the last large remaining infill parcel in Carson City. It reduces sprawl, so we're focusing in an area that has existing services and infrastructure, so it really provides for more efficient use of city services. The plan, it does ensure that all impacts are addressed with future phasing, requires traffic studies, phasing plans, drainage analysis, all that. That will all come as with the first project. We have done a wetland study or in the process of doing a wetland study. That's a lot of it, you know, varies on the season, so it takes a while. But all the wetland areas will be protected and dedicated as open space. I think it's also important to note that we'll have a landscape maintenance district in place that will take care of the parks so that it does not become a burden on the city. And I think this project serves to address the existing drainage and flooding issues that are occurring now. and really will provide new facilities that benefit the entire community, like, say, the trail linkages, the parks, potential for a new school site, that sort of thing that will benefit the community as a whole. Just a quick summary. Incorporate standard uses and designs and vision implemented by the various adopted city plans, that especially when you look at the Parks and Recreation Plan, the Open Space Plan, we've included all those elements and essentially adopted those standards into our project. We meet or exceed the standards adopted by Carson City for park service boundary radius, architecture, landscaping, and whatnot. And once again, there's no development at this time. We do plan to come forward, hopefully in the near future, with some tentative maps and that sort of thing. But at this time, tonight, we're just looking at the underlying land use. I put my contact information here, but once again, I'm happy to answer any questions you might have, and I know I'm sure there's people in the public that would like to speak, so I'm happy to address any questions that might come up.
Thank you. At this point, I'd like to give the commission an opportunity to question either the staff or the applicant, and then once we're finished with that, will anybody in the audience who wishes to comment on this project please step forward and let us know your thoughts on it. So right now, anybody on the commission have any questions? Mr. Sattler.
Just a couple of curiosity questions. One, I notice that, and compliment you, there's going to be no flat roofs, et cetera, on
right.
the buildings, but any equipment or whatever will have to be screened.
Right.
Is that encouraging people more to put the air and everything down at ground level? So and that sort of
what thing? You can do, like for a commercial building, is you put the equipment on the roof, but then you extend the parapet of the roof up
okay.
so it hides all the equipment.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. And the parks, I compliment them putting the dog park in, and I know in some of the other areas they use the retention basins mm-hmm. and the people run their dogs down there all the time. Will the other parks be dog friendly as well, or will it, is that up for
you know that's for a large part it's a city ordinance
okay.
but we plan to have a dedicated dog park where they can run off leash, and that will be fenced and whatnot so they can't you know just run
and again want to compliment you. I noticed in there that there's no chain link fences anywhere
correct.
And even the surrounding fences will be solid of some kind of bordering areas
correct
that, so plan looks very good. Thank you
Ms. Monroy.
I had a curiosity question also. Elise Monroy for the record. So in regards to the FEMA floodplain designation, mm-hmm. so I understand that you're still waiting for approval on that. What happens if FEMA denies approval of the letter?
Then we would, there's two options. Obviously the project couldn't be developed without the FEMA removing us from the floodway. If that doesn't happen, we would have to basically go back and look at another engineering option that would meet their needs. And there is a very good chance that they will come back with comments that we'll need to address or that sort of thing, but we are confident that we will get through that process.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Salerno.
I'm a little bit concerned about the wetlands at the,
thank you, sir, at the southeast corner
mm-hmm.
Of the property that FEMA will certainly be looking at, I'm sure. But I'm wondering, does that drain off somewhere from that location?
You know, I don't. I think Danny might know better on that. But I will tell you that a large area, it is a little misleading. When you go out and you see a lot of those wetland areas that are out there are actually not on our property. Those are actually off-site. So some of the area that you might think is part of the Lompa Ranch is actually not part of this application. It's not owned by us. Or will not be owned by us. It's
okay, but that will all be addressed with the FEMA.
That will all be addressed with the FEMA and with the wetlands space. So areas of wetlands will be dedicated as open space.
I've got some little detail
sure.
concerns. This is a wonder. Well, first of all, I'd like to say that all the utilities will be underground.
Correct.
That's what the plan
that's
says.
That's correct.
And that's good. That's great. I'm concerned about fencing because, you know, this is a wonderful place, Carson City, but it's very, very windy.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look around town, we see that fences have just blown down or they have blown down and they've had to replace them. It seems to me that you need to designate all wood fencing to be resistant to wind damage.
Sure.
And it doesn't say that, and I think it should, wherever it addresses the allowance of wood fences.
Sure. And just so you know, what we see solid wood fences, obviously, on single-family lots, for example. For lots that adjoin open space, we'll be required to have open fencing, which that works great for wind because the wind can blow right through, either split rail or wrought iron, and then obviously for screening purposes. Keep in mind, too, that there will be a master homeowners association for this that will be responsible for enforcing if fences come down, especially within common areas. They will be responsible for repairing that. And then there's a mechanism to enforce fence repairs within neighborhoods itself through the homeowners association.
That's good. I just hope that there will be something addressed in the plan itself that says that. I know that you can use a good neighbor type fence where the boards are staggered on either side of the post and that you get a good deal of privacy, but it allows the wind to go right through the fence and not blow it down.
Right. Yeah, you know, I don't think we would be opposed to putting something in there saying that, you know, that wind load should be a consideration in the placement of new fencing.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Sattler.
I was just curious, and I compliment you on the fact you're going to have a parks that take maintain the parks. Won't this be one of the first in Carson that the city doesn't maintain the parks in the neighborhoods, or are there other cases of that now?
Okay.
There's actually, so the Schultz Ranch development, which is 424 units at the south end of town, will be our first landscape maintenance district. And so that development will pay for the maintenance of the parks within it.
Well,
yes.
A nice feature to save the city quite a bit of money.
Okay. Ms. Munroy.
One more. I'm so sorry.
That's not a problem. That's what we're here for.
Okay. And I'm not sure if now would be a good time for this question, and if we need to address it later, we can. But I'm referencing the findings. And it's the compatibility with existing neighborhoods. The requirement says that land use patterns and development intensity shall be designed to provide for compatibility with existing surrounding neighborhoods. The analysis that staff provided and what was explained just now says that specific land use patterns have not been established. So I don't know if it's a question for staff or for the developer, but
I'll try it then if I'll let, see if I don't, Susan might have more to add. If you look at, like when I showed that zoning map, for example, when we laid out our land use plan, we tried to essentially transition from the existing zones to our zones. So we tried to match for the best part around the edge in order to provide for that transition. So we've got, you know, existing 6,000 square foot lots, for example, will butt up to new 6,000 square foot lots, which then will transfer or transition into more intense uses where we're not just sticking apartments next to existing single-family homes and that sort of thing. So, and Susan might have more to add to that.
And yeah, and just to add to that, that particular finding tends to be all-encompassing. And so when you're looking at the changes in land use designations and the changes in zoning, the kind of compatibility that you're looking for is like land use and like zoning to like zoning. And so that's what this is proposing. So in the cases where you have multifamily apartment zoning, for the most part, they have multifamily apartment zoning adjacent. If they have single-family 6,000, in most cases, single-family 6,000 or similar is adjacent to it. So we feel that it meets the finding because of that.
Thank you for the explanation.
Okay, anyone else? Mr. Salerno.
The Spine Road. I understand it's flexible, the location. It's not specific at this point in time.
It's generally, I mean, I think that gives a very good sense of where it will be. As it comes out north to William Street to Highway 50, there's some easements that need to be secured for that from adjoining property owners, which could potentially shift it here or there, but I think generally speaking, that's how we would like to keep it. It provides for, I think, efficient circulation. It ties in nicely with the extension of where Robinson Street comes in. So I think generally speaking, and then obviously when you get on Fifth Street, you run into sight distance issues as you ramp up over the freeway. So I think generally speaking, we would want to keep it as close to that as possible. And we've met with the owners of the two exclude the ranch houses. And, you know, that roadway, originally, actually, we had that roadway shifted quite a bit to the west with the idea that we didn't want to put it right next to them. And after meeting with them and getting their input, they agreed that it was a suitable location for them as well.
Okay. So understand that when this project moves forward with tentative maps, we will see it again and we'll have a better understanding of where roadways and drainage facilities and specific types of housing will be located. This is just a general framework for how they will proceed from this point forward. I have a couple observations, and that's all they are. This is a major change from the existing Lampa Ranch specific plan area designations. The original map had envisioned a much larger area of commercial mixed use, much larger area of residential mixed use, and a substantial area of residential mixed use or employment mixed use. And it seems like we're moving to a much more of a multifamily housing type of development project with a fairly large component of single-family residential, but it still seems to me to be a major shift. And just so that people are aware of that in their consideration of the project going forward, I have a question for staff regarding in the current master plan. It talks about for creating new zoning districts for the mixed-use land use designations. I'm just trying to get my mind around this. That is the applicant coming forward with this project because we don't have those land use designations or those zoning districts for the mixed use projects, or are you just going to sort of blow off the idea of mixed use and move forward with residential projects?
No, I don't know who you want.
Yeah, well, I'd like to know where we are with the creating zoning districts, and then have your response to that too.
Good. For the record, Lee Plemmel, Community Development Director, and so my background in this is that I was the project lead in planning when the master plan was adopted in 2006. So I do have some history on how this got developed with what's in there today with that mixed-use commercial and mixed-use residential. So back in 2006, it was adopted. So it was between 2004 and 2006, we were going through the process. We contacted the property owners then to see if they had any idea about how they might want to develop it. And it was just too premature back then for them to be more detailed on where commercial areas might be, where residential might be. So as Susan said in the initial thing, we use the mixed-use commercial and mixed-use residential as a placeholder, with the commercial generally being north and towards the freeway and the residential towards the residential. Part of that at the time, there were totally different discussions going on about what might happen with that property, including, and honestly, that was a site that was looking at possibly where an auto mall would go. So that's why the mixed use, we wanted to make sure it captured some mixed use commercial there. So that, there was talk of that, and they were building the freeway, and perhaps how are they going to build the freeway, maybe have an off ramp there and have more intense commercial uses there. So, but that was, again, still unknown. So it was really those mixed use were placeholders to mean that there would be potentially a mix of uses. There might be some commercial use in the future, might be some residential use, and at those rough densities that are associated with those mixed-use land designations. So they're not throwing out, I wouldn't say they're throwing out the use of mixed idea of mixed use in this. I mean, it's not a true vertical mixed-use village, but I think they are coming in with a plan that includes a mix of uses as was originally contemplated. In there, you're right, we haven't taken that big leap of actually developing a mixed-use zoning district that allows probably higher density than current single-family residential, but and with a mix of commercial and residential uses. That's a big project, but I wouldn't say they've thrown out the idea of mixed use, or I wouldn't say we've thrown out the idea of a mix of uses developing on this process just because they're changing it. It was contemplated since 2006 that they would be coming in for to change the land use map.
Thank you. Do you want to add anything?
It would be very similar to what Lee said, is when the 2006 plan was adopted, I think one big wild card was the freeway and whether there was going to be off-ramps, that sort of thing, which, you know, the commercial area along the freeway, even though they have high visibility, the access to that commercial area is not ideal for large commercial uses. So it's really not, it's very viable for what we envision is like neighborhood serving commercial uses. But for large scale shopping centers and big box retailers, for example, it's not a great commercial site. But I think our plan calls for a lot of like internal neighborhood serving type commercial uses, smaller scale. I think on the north side, there could be potential for some true mixed use with residential and office and commercial and that sort of thing. So I would definitely not rule out mixed-use development within the project.
Okay, thank you. All right. Mr. Owen.
One question. It's very well delineated how all the intersections are going to be made, except for the one central to your project, and it seems to be a roundabout. Is that in the project as a roundabout?
It's right now it's not specifically called out as a roundabout, and to be honest with you, a lot of that will probably depend on our final traffic numbers on the, once the tenant map comes in, we know exact unit counts. But that potentially could be a roundabout, or it could be a four-way stop, it could be or a three-way stop, it could be a signalized intersection. I don't think we would get to the signalized intersection stage. I don't think we have the traffic volumes for that, but a roundabout wouldn't be out of the question.
Yeah, and what would be the determining factor between a four-way stop and a roundabout?
It would be traffic. It would all be based on traffic volumes.
Thank you.
Okay, I have a question for staff to the engineering department. The drainage analysis that they did mentions that they will install the drainage improvements as the project progresses. It seems to me that this is a pretty significant confluence of major drainage ways, and that it would be pretty important to have all of those through flows dealt with at the very beginning, and I wonder if you've given that any consideration.
So just to give you an overview, the LOMAR right now is to revise to the conditions that are there today. So if you look at it, the whole site's covered in floodway and floodplain. Well, we know that's not the case. We know there's some areas that aren't in that. The LOMAR right off the bat is to say what's really out there. Then the CLOMAR, the certified letter of map revision, comes in that says we're going to build these channels here, we're going to build these channels here, and if we build these channels, we have these areas that are outside of the floodplain. So without completely getting into all the details, generally the CLOMAR, in order to provide those areas to develop, they're going to need to build a lot of those drainage channels right off the bat. So I wouldn't say that you need to put that requirement on there. In my opinion, it's pretty well stated that in order to develop anywhere on the site, you're going to need to provide those mitigation and those channels in order to have FEMA buy off that you're going to put a project here that's truly outside of a floodplain. If that answers your question, I'll let Mike chime in if there's anything other than that.
It would have been very similar, that those channels will have to be built in order to provide any significant area to where we could develop.
I'm just speaking from experience in other jurisdictions where major projects have been approved without adequate provision for the drainage, and then as pieces of the project failed, the drainage failed along with it. And I would just like to ensure that the drainage does not fail in this case because of its major significance in draining Carson City.
The comments that we've put into the revisions, essentially the process that we've placed in there is the LOMAR prior to anything happening. What's really out there today? Each individual project must have a CLOMAR that goes with it approved prior to anything happening. Then funds must be placed with the city to follow up with the LOMAR, and there will be an associated bond to provide those improvements. So let's say 100 units come in day one, they do a CLOMAR, they build a drainage ditch along Robinson, and they go to build 100 units, we're, one, going to require a bond for those improvements. Two, we're going to say you're not getting any of these approved until you have a approved CLOMAR from FEMA, and you have to place funds with us so that once the CLOMAR is done, the improvements are built, we can then go back to FEMA and say, okay, this was all done properly. Here's the correct map that goes with the improvements that are there. So I think in what we've tried to convey in the SPA, I think that's the process we've envisioned.
Mr. Chairman, you used the term project, and I don't want the public to think you're approving a project. Right, okay, sorry. Okay. It's the zoning and land use.
Right, zoning and land use, but my concern is that, you know, they have brought forward a preliminary drainage analysis, which will be used for the LOMAR and the CLOMAR, and but it says in that document that drainage improvements will be implemented as the project moves forward. And I just want to be, my concern is that we don't create a situation where the drainage that needs to happen to just continue what's currently draining out of there is able to go through that project into the downstream points. But I have faith that the city is not going to let this happen. I just wanted to bring it forward as a concern.
I think what I just would want to follow up to that is that in providing all of these things in here and trying to line out as much of that detail as possible, we've tried to put in a policy that addresses that, and then it will be a continuing ongoing effort to look at each project, each piece as it comes in to make sure that that is not happening.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Sadler.
Another question. Looking at the map, the single family six area looks to be somewhere around 40% of the project, probably 40 to 50 somewhere.
That's
there.
Probably correct. I haven't.
And on page 31, it mentioned when I was reading, density with single family areas will range from 3 to 8 dwellings per acre, which is quite a range. What do you have a ballpark idea what you see how many houses roughly will be in those two areas?
I have a kind of a general sense of what will be built total
right.
number
That's
of units
I was just kind of
would be somewhere. I mean, if you, I think I ran the numbers, it would max out at 2,500, but realistically, it's probably going to be more in the ballpark of 1,500 to 1,750 total units.
Okay.
That includes multifamily.
I was just trying to get more of a feel for that.
Right.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. At this time, is there anyone in the public who wishes to address this item? Please step forward and state your name for the record and sign in on the sign-in sheet, if you please.
Daryl Harris. I'm a resident in the Meadows. And just maybe it was already brought forward before I got here, but I'm not sure the yellow and red crosshatch zones. What does that signify?
The yellow and red crosshatching are out, are excluded from the from this area. From
okay.
What under consideration?
Yeah, because I know those are flood zone areas already. Yeah. So, and then the okay, that makes more sense than single family, multifamily. Okay, that was my only concern was that. When I bought there 2 years ago, that was flood zone, and just wanted to see if that was going to be affected by the projects.
Not by this particular proposal.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Please step forward. State your name for the record and sign in on the sign-in sheet, if you please.
Okay. My name's Kathleen Flanagan. I'm a novice at this, so I hope you can bear with me. But I'm a homeowner on Appaloosa Court, And I would like to know how this is going to impact the cul-de-sacs as far as the busy, the busyness of Solomon, because we only have one way out. Is that?
Okay. Could you point out Appaloosa Court, please?
Right in there.
Yeah, it's one of these cul-de-sacs.
There's two of them.
It's actually labeled on there. So that says Pinto Court
right
there.
There's
on the
Pinto and
west
Appaloosa.
Side of Salmon.
Okay. Oh, I see it. Okay. at this point, there are no numbers associated with this project other than very general traffic analysis.
Mm-hmm.
At the next stage of the process, which will be tentative maps for particular subdivisions within the project area, then the traffic analysis will indicate what improvements need to be made to any street to ensure that the traffic conditions are safe and reasonable.
Okay. Are there any low-income houses slated for this area for the development?
Okay.
Not as a part of this particular proposal. They're just proposing zoning and land use, so mm-hmm. any actual development that may or may not include low-income housing hasn't been presented to us yet and would be presented to us at a later date. So we can't really answer that right now.
Okay. I understand that there's going to be a fire station built. And if so, could I ask where that is going to be placed?
So as a...
I was trying to get out of here. Bob Strahan's for the record, fire chief, Carson City Fire. I just want to tell you, this is the first time we've got developer agreements to where they're actually going to help us fund a fire station. And you're going to see me in front of you every time there's a subdivision coming in. We're trying to make this for the rest of the city. We're using these guys as a jump-off point because there absolutely is no revenue to build them. We, as far as your answer goes, because we are looking at the only property that Carson City currently owns, is that has the infrastructure already in. We already have power and sewer and everything else. It's basically across from the Buddeye area road where Public Works is currently. But we've also been working with these guys saying, look, we can look at some land swaps or we can look at some infrastructure workings to figure out where the best place is for the fire station. And if nothing changes, we would put it there because it's a best access point for us all. We can go north, south, east. We can hit the freeways. And we can get through the roundabout, and it's faster than coming all the way from Station 51 because most of our growth area obviously is going to be the east, and that road will allow us to get into Carson, into the Carson Basin over by the river. So that's preferably where we'd like it, although we just said, yeah, I was just kidding with, hey, you got a 10-acre park. I'd rather put it in the park than over there by the the corporate yard. So ideally, the main position will be probably close to where the current at the dog pound is right now, the old one. You know,
okay.
If you came down from that, there's some property, then there's a cemetery, then there's open lots. It would be right in there is what the city currently owns. And then depending on where we could stick one, if we were to put a different location, it would be as long as we have access, quick access to the roads, because we have to cover Highway 50, and that's the issue. Highway 50, and then also we want to go south. Hope that helps.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure it wasn't right across from my street. So.
Oh, no. It wouldn't do us any good to put it there.
Okay. Sorry if I'm taking up time, but
no,
I have some other questions. I noticed on some of the images there were swimming pools and water for the kids. I've lived here for almost 40 years, and we've always had a problem with water. And I'm wondering where this water is going to come from, since I was told several years ago that we had enough water to the year 2010. So what about that?
I think that we'll let the engineering department address that issue, specifically to the water, and then the parks department can address the images that you saw with swimming pools and fountains.
Let me go first.
One of the things...
could you identify yourself?
Yes, thank you so much. Yes, Vern Cron, Carson City Senior Park Planner. In working with the developer, one of the things that...
as trying to develop a quality community for this development, one of the things that we wanted to ask him for was to have what's called a neighborhood splash pad. And so this would be an opportunity for the first time in Carson City to have one of these available to the public. It, as envisioned, it would be part of that 10-acre park that you see on the west side, and it would be probably associated with the playground, and it would be a recirculating system. So it's not like you would have the water and it would like disappear down the drain. It would be some sort of a recirculating system. This is not by any means any kind of a large water park facility. It's just a small little neighborhood place where people can come cool off for the summer. Reno has some of those, and Las Vegas has a lot of those, actually. So that's what's envisioned. It's a small neighborhood facility. It's not intended to be a big splash park. So, and it would be associated with some of the other recreational amenities at the park, and it would be a recirculating system. Does that help?
Okay. Thank you.
Ted, do you want to address the availability of water issue?
How much time you got? I'll give everyone just a quick rundown. I don't know where the information had come from before. It might have been that in the early to mid-2000s, there was some EPA regulations that required some additional sources that had higher arsenic levels to be taken out of service. We had to go make the connection to Douglas County. But in general, the build-out of Carson City has been identified with adequate resources. The key is that those resources, some of them, are not developed today. So that means more wells, expanding a treatment plant, those sorts of things, in order to get that water from a creek to a faucet, from the ground to a faucet. So what they've provided is a general, here's going to be some of the demands, and then it'll be their responsibility as they build out each project to make sure they've got the right size piping in order to get that water to them. And if you see in here, one of the comments that I put in here is that the current availability of water, any capacity we have today, is on a first-come, first-served basis. So there is going to be needing in the future a wastewater treatment plant expansion. There is going to need to be in the future a water treatment plant expansion, a well expansion. So as long as we are out ahead of those things with our water and sewer master plans, for build-out, we've been planning that we are okay for resources. It's just developing those resources over time, which is kind of a planning topic. If that summarizes it all as best I can.
I think that was a good summary. Thank you.
And then I only have one more question, and that's what's the impact going to be as far as taxes to the homeowners? Because, I mean, we're always talking about that we don't have any money, and I know this is a huge development, and I'm hoping it's going to be beneficial for all of the areas around there, because we've all put a lot of money in our homes, and we don't want to have to move because all of a sudden there's like a billion people going to be moving in there. And so I'm curious about that as well. And then I'll leave it to anybody else. And thank you for your time.
Okay,
I appreciate it.
Thank you. At this point, I don't know that it's possible to address potential.
Yeah, that's
yeah. There would be property taxes, but it's
right.
Not. It's not at this point. There's no way of knowing what the impact of property on taxes is going to be, because we don't know the type of development at this stage. We don't know the number of units. It's just too up in the air to even try to predict. There will be property taxes associated with whatever development happens on the property. And
I think what she's actually asking is, will it impact her tax. Will it impact, do we need a new high school because of this? Do we need new infrastructure? Is there going to be increased spending over and above that's going to create an increase? I think that's really her concern.
Okay. I don't know that we have the answer to that one either. I think that's a good point, though. I mean, we all know that, and I hate to say this, but development does not pay for itself. over the long run. This needs to be planned out really well so that the infrastructure that is put in place to support this project is cost effective, and that there are sources to pay for fire stations, and that there are ways of recovering the cost of the increase in demand. Mr. Plemmel.
I'm going to tag on to that discussion a little bit here about cost effectiveness, because studies have been done, and just so you know, it's a better use of resources and more cost effective and more cost recovery to higher the density. For example, if this was 1 acre lots that were developed through here, and they dedicated the city streets, there's some threshold where the infrastructure, you know, you have to have 100 feet of water pipe and you maintain it for one house instead of five or whatever, or three or two. There's that kind of cost. So there's actually a cutoff. I mean, there's not a magic number. It varies from community to community. But in general, that's why through our master plan, Carson City has chosen to protect our surrounding hillsides. We went through the master plan, and as a result of that, the lands bill that the federal government asked us if we want any of these hillsides to develop on. Carson City's answer was no, we want them as open space, and we've got that. So we have a barrier around there, because that type of sprawl would be expensive. That would cost the city taxpayer in the long run to pay for services for those residents. This type of infill development is more efficient for the use of tax dollars and resources. I'd like to say that.
Thank you. I think that's a good point, that this is infill development, and typically that is a better use of resources. Ms. Monroy had a question.
Okay.
Mr. Sattler.
Well, and to tag on to that as well, there's a couple things we're doing new here as far as the parks having, with the other new development, having their own parks, maintenance, et cetera. But the big thing the fire chief mentioned, and I had a question on that as well, it says there will be $1,000 per dwelling for single home or multi-family residential. Does that mean each apartment would kick in $1,000, or each apartment would, or each multi-duplex would, plus $1,000 per every 1,000 square foot of a commercial? I mean, in essence, you will be building with if you talk with build-out, you'd probably pay for a firehouse as well. And that's new to us as well, correct? I mean, this doesn't happen normally. Okay, thank you.
Yes, that is correct. Per residential unit, whether it's multifamily or single family, because from a fire service call standpoint, multifamily is no different from single family.
That will be quite a large amount of money when this thing is completed.
Can I have a clarification on that? Does that, I know in the past there was $1,000 per building permit for residential that was dedicated to the Parks Department. Is that also still in there?
So the residential, do you want to take that, Vern, or you want me to answer? I'll let Vern take it.
Again, Vern Cron, Carson City Senior Park Planner. This is one of those things we've learned from the Schultz Ranch development that we're bringing forward with this one, is that the developer is required to build our parks and our trail systems. However, we will not be collecting the residential construction tax. Basically, the way it's worked in the past is that as a home would be built, the city would collect $1,000, and it would go into this kitty. So then they would give it to us. Then we would collect paperwork from them, justifying that they spent all this money, and then we would give the money back to them. So it became a big paperwork shuffle for us. So what we were really after, the bottom line was to build parks and to build trails, and that's what we wanted them to do. And so we did this with the Schultz Ranch folks. We said, hey, let's not go through this paperwork shuffle. We're going to expect a 3.5-acre park out of you. We're expecting multi-use paths. We're expecting the detention basins down there, which I think there's about an acre per detention basin down there. Those all have park facilities in them. We expect that. In return, we're not going to collect the residential construction tax, but we're still dealing with the impact of that residential a development within the community. And that's just the way we've approached it with Schultz Ranch. We're still waiting to see how this works. But in the past, we have had that problem, especially as the development over the years has taken a long time to get to the point where it triggers a park, and then they build the park, and then it takes them a while to get the paperwork to us, and is that right? And then we give them partial monies and partial payments, and it just turns into a paperwork nightmare. But the whole purpose behind the residential construction tax is an impact fee. That's what it is. And so what we're saying is, yes, there's an impact. You just build us parks, and we don't collect the residential construction tax. It's just simpler. We believe it's simpler. And from some of the experiences we've had, it becomes a paperwork nightmare. So does that answer your question? Okay.
Thank you.
Twice. Again, for the record, Bob Sherian's Fire Department. One of the things that we put in the language, it says it's a minimum in there. And the reason why we're looking at it is, one, we're looking at a citywide, right, to make this work. And if it's citywide, then we can actually probably lower some of the costs, hopefully, but as a minimum, so we know what our target rate is. Because we're looking at, if you take this subdivision, say it's 8-year build out from now, right? And we got to start collecting. Well, the fire station right now today is $4 million. So you're looking at, we're going to have to create a bonding source with a funding source to be able to do that. So if you're looking at how these impact fees will work for us, same thing. We're going to put it into obviously nothing's going to happen until we see the dirt move and then the subdivision's going in. When the first sticks are going up, we have to start looking about, okay, when do we get that station in? Because as time goes forward, that's going to, one, increase our building costs as inflation hits, but secondarily, when's the use going to hit that we're going to actually see some impact of those? And we're looking at downrange to get that station built. So that's some of the reasons on how that impact fees will help the fire department.
Just a question. Will you collect that fee before the houses and whatever are built, once they're started, or will you collect it once they're sold, or how does?
No, we're going to collect it when the building permits for the sticks to go up. Yeah, so we can count. So if we come in and say, look, they're going to put the first 100 homes in, we can start like, okay, look, we're going to go put the foundation in. Then they build the next round, okay, then we'll put this in, or we'll go out and bond it, but then we have a funding source to pay for the bond, if that makes sense. All right?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Please step forward and state your name for the record.
Name's Kyle Astiri, live on Evan. I know we're just talking about zoning right now. I was just curious if there was an estimated time when this project would start and also a completion. I work in the paint industry, and I know how long a lot of these developments take. And I really, being a resident right there, I don't want to be around construction equipment lingering for 10 years and just kind of that noise and irritation. So I just didn't know if there's something said on that I could look into.
Yeah, I asked the applicant to address that.
Once again, Mike Raley. Clearly, it's going to be market-driven. I can tell you right now there's a very high demand for new housing based on some of the employment announcements that have been made. We would like to submit tentative maps as soon as possible. Once we get through the LOMAR process, so, you know, hopefully late summer, early fall for the tentative maps to be submitted, and then there's a review process. You know, I would envision somewhere between a 5 to 10 year potentially build out for a project of this magnitude. But keep in mind, just to phase it logically, you would start kind of around the edges and work your way to the middle. So the areas where you would disturb the residences would go fairly quickly, and then it would all be internal to the project itself where the construction would be occurring.
Yeah. Mr. Sattler, you have a question.
And you probably see, like, you're not going to build all the houses first or all the apartments. You're going to build out
It might come in. The first phase might be some multifamily units and single-family units, or multifamily and some commercial. So, yeah, it won't all happen at once.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for that. Yes, please step forward, state your name, sign in.
My name's John Foody, 1528 Goldfield. I live over off of Solomon. I just got one question. It looks like there's going to be a lot of apartments in that development. And if you go ahead and do the zoning now, before any kind of traffic studies are done, you're going to be stuck with that particular plan, right? And you have no idea how much traffic's going to be in there.
Well, we do have a preliminary traffic analysis that that takes into consideration the potential densities of the development. But as projects come forward, additional traffic analysis will have to be done to determine actual improvements that will need to be made.
Okay,
and whether or not circulation works or not.
Right.
If the circulation doesn't work, then they won't be able to do it.
So then that zoning could be changed to single family or.
Well, the zoning.
Or you just
the, when the zoning allows zoning. The zoning allows all kinds of uses within the zoning district. There are, just because it's multifamily doesn't mean that it has to be 36 units per acre. It could be as low as 8 units per acre.
So, in other words, that's pretty much going to go specifically off of traffic studies.
Right.
Okay. Right.
That will be considered at that point. That the actual density will depend upon what they can do with the traffic, among other things.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, Mr. Rotter.
I'll just mention that the overall traffic study is fairly detailed, but it considers the impacts from those uses. But we put a requirement in here: each phase will require a traffic impact study to be completed and submitted for that phase prior to approval of any construction permits in that phase. We'll have the overall to compare with, and then we'll also have the specific one for that project. So we'll be able to compare as anything is slightly changing over time. We'll have this as the base, and then each report will be updated as we go along.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Does anyone else want to address this item? Mr. Harris. Oh.
Hal Saylor, and I live on the northeast corner at Green Drive and Green Court, off in Menlo and off in Highway 50. And the traffic there is already so bad. I mean, in the morning you have to be lucky to make it out of there. And when you go down out of Menlo, either way, Airport Road or on the west side, you sometimes have to wait for two traffic lights just to get out on Highway 50. And I noticed that you got high-density buildings in the corner there, and it's already crowded with traffic. What are we going to do? And when you put in apartments and you've got some heavy-duty housing going in there, some apartments and some stuff, that's going to mean... I don't know, three cars to every apartment you have. It's not going to work very well. Then I have one other problem, too, with water and FEMA. I fought FEMA for 10 years over there as president of the association. These people were paying $800 a year or more for flood insurance. Well, finally, I think FEMA's coming around, but It took them 15 years, so I hope you have better luck than we had. I want you to know about the water, though. We still have water problems. There's 20 buildings. There's 120 units there, and we still have water under the buildings. We have to pump those constantly. We had to put in a bunch of sump wells and pumps to pump the water out from underneath the buildings. And we've had problems with mold. We've had problems with deteriorating foundations and lumber under there. Now, I've owned the place for over 40 years, so I know whereof I speak. And I don't know what you're going to do about those kinds of things, but I hope you have a plan for it, because if you dig a hole over there, it's 2.5 feet deep, you got water. So I just think they ought to know about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Harris, do you want to?
Daryl Harris again. Just some questions on the plan. What is NB? What's that designation?
Neighborhood business is the zoning district. It's a low-intensity commercial zoning district, neighborhood business. That's actually existing today.
Okay. On that corner at Solomon and Fifth that exists today.
Yes. I'm sorry. The zoning doesn't exist. It exists in the master plan land use designation as neighborhood commercial. So they're proposing the neighborhood business zoning district to go with the land use designation.
Okay, so
it would be similar to what is on the south side of that road now.
And the other question was, I see there's a P there where the high school is. Is that where the park is? P standing for park?
P is for public. It's public? A public zoning district, and because it's the school, that's why it's zoned that way. We're not proposing.
No changes.
They're
to
not
that
proposing
area.
Change to the high school.
Okay,
zoning.
So the park that is proposed, can you show about where that is planned? The
park is proposed here.
Right there. It's, okay.
Yeah, I think in the and then if you go to green, the green area. It's here.
Okay, so
and then there's another one over here.
And then on this one, the green strips along the roadway, along Solomon and along Fifth, is that a setback sort of an area? Is that what's?
Those would be designated as open space areas.
Open space areas. Okay.
And they're specifically drainage channels.
Okay, and widths on those, 100 feet. Is that kind of what we're looking at? 50 feet, maybe?
I'm not sure that we have the specific width at this level.
Okay.
Give me a second. I'll find it.
All right. Thank you.
Does anyone else have any comments on this? Please step forward. State your name for the record.
Lisa Butterfield. Do I sign?
Yes.
I do have a letter to read. I was told by the receptionist at the Planning Commission office that I could read a letter. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Some of this stuff has already been addressed. This is my first time public speaking, so I'll try not to be too stiff, but I'd like to read the letter. My husband and I have been residents at the same place where Hal Saylor, who just spoke, lived for 9 years. And we had received this official notice postmarked February 5th on Monday, February 8th, 2016. We were stunned, to say the least. This notice marked the very first time we have heard anything about this, yet it indicates that it must have been in the planning stages for quite a while, possibly as far back as 2006. This fact was actually confirmed by a telephone conversation I had with the planning manager, Susan Dorpansky. Susan did admit that they had known all along that some sort of development was planned for the Lompa Ranch open space, but didn't know what it was yet. This is referred to in the notice as the Carson City Master Plan. Other than the fact that the new I-580 freeway extension was put through, we and other homeowners in this area were totally unaware of the existence of such a plan. By the way, we were not notified personally of the plans for the freeway either. We purchased our home in 2007, and had we known of the existence of such a plan, it would have greatly influenced our decision about whether or not to buy a home in this area. Proper disclosure is required for real estate sales. Since we knew nothing about this, we wonder whether the realtors knew at the time either. Susan told me that only 10 days notice is required by state law for proper disclosure. She said they were originally approached in December 2015 with the new proposals, but that they didn't receive their applications until January of 2016. So apparently we and others were not required to be notified of any of this until master plan and zoning map amendment changes applications were submitted to the planning division, finalized and made ready to submit to the Planning Commission for a vote to recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of these plans. Also, the receptionist told me on Friday, 2/12/16, that they were only required to send out 30 notices, but they actually sent out 277. Since there are approximately 55,000 people in Carson City, and many people besides ourselves will actually be affected, this seems like a very minuscule number of people informed. We are underwater in our home and cannot even qualify for a refi at this time. We are very concerned with how this planned development will affect our property's value. Also, a couple years back, after having to pay an annual FEMA flood insurance premium, since we moved in, the flood zone pertaining to our property was changed and the requirement to carry flood insurance was dropped. When this unsustainable financial burden was lifted, we rejoiced. However, we are very concerned that the planned development will cause new problems with irrigation drainage removal of excess water, possibly causing a renewed issue with possible flooding extending onto our property and the property of others in our same area. This could possibly result in the FEMA flood zone being reinstated, resulting in our lender requiring us to once again pay a yearly flood insurance premium. There is no telling how high the yearly premiums could rise. This would not only be a financial disaster for ourselves and our neighbors, but would also be patently unfair, seeing as how it would be caused by the new construction and not anything that we have direct control over. Also, we are wondering if perhaps the flood zone amendment was ultimately approved to favor this new construction. Did they know about this at the time the map was amended? Because no one in their right mind wants to purchase a property in a flood zone, not only because of the danger of losing their property and possessions to a flood, but also because of the outrageously prohibitive costs of carrying such a policy. We are not accusing but merely asking. We would like to believe that everyone is being treated fairly. And I know that that was just addressed by Mike, yes, that he addressed some of that. Can you bring me my water, please? With all that in mind, here's a summary list of our specific concerns regarding the planned development. Number one, noise. Construction zones are noisy places. This will turn a very peaceful, quiet, rural area into a virtual war zone. Flying debris from tons of earth, which will need to be displaced, large, noisy machines, etc. This will affect the current residents' peaceful enjoyment. After the construction is completed, there will be more noise from music, loud voices, more pets, car alarms, and just from cars traveling back and forth along the extra streets, which will need to be added. Number two, crime. The unnatural crowding of way more people into the area, along with the stressful conditions it produces, will undoubtedly cause many to say we need more law enforcement personnel. And I'm just going to add in and possibly other first responders. Then they will want to raise taxes to get the money to pay for it. This will cause more of a burden on existing homeowners. Number three, pollution. In an area which is now a fenced-off open field will become a densely populated area. This will bring in more litter, more cigarette butts, booze bottles, smells from increased air pollution, and more garbage, not to mention increased fire danger. EMF radiation pollution will increase as a whole bunch more smart meters are added. Number four, traffic. Airport Road, 5th Street, and Solomon Road will most certainly become extremely congested as 1,500 to 2,500 possible new dwellings are added, and the cars there will have to enter and exit with the limited roadways now existing. Trying to fit all those cars in this small area could be a logistical nightmare. This would become a permanent problem, not to mention more automobile accidents, which will invariably occur. Number five, crowding. At local businesses, stores, the post office, etc., as a limited number of businesses with a limited amount of space are forced to accommodate the everyday needs of up to 10,000 more residents, just going by maybe four per dwelling if 2,500 are added. I know they said it would be less, but just going by that. It will become much more difficult for everybody to go about their daily business. Number six, water. How will it affect the already overtaxed water supply and the cost of water if all these new units are added? We're already on watering restrictions. How will adding up to 2,500 new dwellings help with that? Number seven, view. We currently enjoy a beautiful unimpeded view of the mountains and surrounding roadways that extends quite a way out. This will be changed forever, as looking out the window instead of seeing the mountains, we will probably see the top level of the apartments just over the fence. Again, had we known about this prior to our purchase, you can bet it would have affected our decision to buy. This will also affect ours and others' privacy, as it will be possible for residents to peer through our back gate and carport area, something which would have been previously impossible. Number eight, property value. Unknown how this will affect us, but if someone can buy a newer place right down the road, they might not want to purchase in our older complex if they can get a newer place for the same price or cheaper. Number nine, flooding. Already covered this earlier in the letter, but it is one of our primary concerns. We do not want to have to pay FEMA flood insurance premium again after we fought so hard to get it dropped. This would also make it difficult for us to sell our place, as potential buyers would be put off by such a requirement. Number 10, jobs. Will there be enough jobs to accommodate the increase in new residents? Number 11, wildlife. The area of Lampa Ranch behind our home has been untouched and a home to wildlife for the entire time we've lived here. We have enjoyed llamas, jackrabbits, toads, birds, and can hear coyotes some nights. We've seen people run their dogs out there. Most or all of that will be gone if this proposed amendment is approved. We also can still see cattle which graze behind the Lampa Ranch, which is kind of a charming thing, you know, living in this area. We enjoy it. The next thing is just referencing item three that I mentioned, pollution, smog. We are concerned that introducing so many more cars into this rural area may cause the DMV and PS to try to pass more restrictive laws and require Carson City drivers to have to be smog certified. At present, Carson is exempt. We're also concerned about, if I can find it here in this paperwork. Converting Carson Street to two lanes of traffic instead of four, with so many more cars added because of the new development, will cause permanent downtown traffic jams and headaches beyond belief. This list of concerns is by no means all-inclusive, but is meant to shine some light on the seriousness of the real problems a venture of this magnitude would most certainly create. I had more, but I think I'll end there. Would anyone like to address any of the issues I brought up?
Well, it's a little overwhelming.
Is it?
The number of issues.
Oh, because we find this whole thing overwhelming, and that was precisely the point I was trying to make.
Well, you did a good job of.
Thank you,
Ms. Monroy.
Thank you for being here. I actually have a question for the developer to address one of the issues that you brought up regarding the FEMA flood insurance premium. Can anyone tell us how the potential change in the wetland designation or the LOMAR or CLOMAR, FLOMAR, whatever all those letters are. Can anyone tell us how that might affect the FEMA flood insurance premium rates?
Let me just give you some background as to how we got to where we are today. The freeway built some extensive drainage networks, which took you out of the floodplain. So a lot of those homes where Gonai Canyon drains right there, the freeway actually improved a lot of those situations and built larger culverts to handle that flow and take it out into that wetlands ponding area that's just north of 5th Street. So the east side there is generally already out of the floodplain and won't be touching any of those conveyances to the east of the freeway. They might be doing some stuff further to the south, near the wetlands to create some buffers or some detention for on-site flows. On the west side, the LOMAR process is to depict what is there today in an accurate fashion. So when they started FEMA, they said, yeah, it floods all over here. And they had to do it quickly, so they just kind of did a wide swath and then said, we'll come back later and analyze that. Well, here we are 20 years later still trying to analyze all those things to get them right. So the LOMAR process in itself is an highly engineering-based what's there today. That won't affect the east side because that's already been done. They're not modifying anything over there. Any of the CLOMARs would need approval from Carson City first. So we would be looking at it and them saying, I'm going to build a drainage facility here. And they're going to show us where they think the new floodplain is, and it's up to us and then ultimately FEMA to determine that that doesn't have any adverse effects to anywhere else. Generally, though, if they can channelize those flows that come from the west, that's the biggest problem and will actually help out some of the lots that are west of Solomon. Does that help or make things more confusing?
So I think that answered my question. Going forward, I think it might be helpful because as the progress or the project develops, I think it might be helpful as those CLOMARs are done to maybe, I don't know if there's a way to work with FEMA so we can know if flood insurance premiums for anybody else will be affected. Maybe we can make that part of analysis going forward to address these types of public concerns. I don't know, just something to think about. So, but my question was addressed, and I hope it maybe brought some clarification to you.
Mr. Sadler.
So, Danny, what you're saying is on the east side, which is where you are.
Yes.
It shouldn't affect it because that's all the mitig. It's all. It shouldn't bring it back. In other words.
Correct. Yep.
It's actually been improved with the freeway, et cetera, so there'd be no problems building in that area. It should not change any of the drainage or anything, so they shouldn't have to pay insurance again.
Correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Castro.
I'm sorry, what was the last name?
Butterfield.
Butterfield. When did you say, what year did you buy your house?
2007.
Okay, so for future, just to help you, some advice with the process, they did the master plan in 2006. So you may have wanted to look into the master plan and the designations of a property located near your home that you were buying. Now, there'll probably be another master plan 2021, 2022. Lee, somewhere in there. Lee's like, I don't want to do that again. But let's say somewhere in 2024, there's going to be workshops and classes open to the public for you to get involved in how the land's going to be designated. Because right now, out of the existing master plan, you had multi-use residential, multi-use commercial, multi-use employment, and then you do have an area of open space. Now, that's somewhere you could be bringing up a lot of issues in talking about open space. But this master plan already exists, so you kind of wanted to get involved a long time ago. So for future, if you have a chance to get involved in the master plan and it regards land that you're going to purchase or for your residence, that's kind of where the process starts, just in trying to give you some advice.
Thank you for that. But, I mean, the whole point was that looking back, we would have appreciated more than what we really got was 16 days notice prior to this meeting of something that's been known for 10 or possibly 20 years. So we would have appreciated a little
it's
more
notice.
It's
been known since 2006 is what I'm saying. So right, if that's I would have purchased a home, let's say I'm coming in now and I'm going to purchase a home in a certain area in Carson City, I'm going to go find a master plan, which is public document, and I'm going to say, oh, wow, this has been zoned for mixed residential, or this is going to have multifamily, so that at any point of time in the future, I'm buying that property knowing that this has already been approved and then that the project could come in. Does that make sense? As opposed to saying, oh, this is all open space or this has been designated never to be built on. So I'm just saying you have to kind of use the master plan to your advantage and get involved in it as well. I'm sorry, it's not what you want to hear.
I'm just kind of trying
to explain the process.
I hear you, but just the whole point was that we would have appreciated more notice, and I'm certain that we're not alone in feeling that way.
Mr.
Thank
Owen.
Thank you.
Yeah, I had a real question that they're talking about the extra cost of the insurance and that's been dropped. Was that because of the freeway, or was that prior to the building of the freeway?
probably was the improvement. They probably followed a CLOMAR to say, we're going to build these improvements in the floodplain, but when we're done, we're going to have these channelized areas to direct the floodplain to the kind of ponding area. So the actual reduction was probably after the freeway was done.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Foodie.
Yes. On the corner of 5th and Solomon.
Wait, you could get to the microphone first.
Okay. On the corner of 5th and Solomon, you've got multi-family, you're going to have more apartments in there, right?
Right.
Now, how are the people going to get out of there?
We won't know that until the actual proposal for the project comes forward.
I wouldn't zone it that way then. If you go, you know, then if you zone it like that, that's all that's going to be able to go in there.
No, the multifamily can encompass a lot of different types of housing.
But it's sad because, you know, there's a lot of traffic right there on that intersection now, and then how are you going to exit people out of there?
Well, the same way that they exit from the multifamily housing on 5th Street and on Solomon. And
you're just going to be adding a whole lot more.
Well, that's true.
That's what's going to be.
That's true, but the traffic analysis should tell us what kinds of improvements to the roadways need to be made to accommodate that additional traffic.
Okay.
Okay. Ms. Pansy. Oh, there's one more person who.
I was just wondering, Mrs. Butterfield, do you have a copy of that letter for the record that we can have?
Please come up to the microphone to address after this lady is done. Go ahead.
You want me to speak now?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Margo Muller, and I've lived in Carson for over 50 years, and I'm very, very happy to be living here. But I have seen so many projects start and never get completed. Two examples is like behind Kohl's. Something was being built years ago, and nothing but a fence around it now, and a bunch of pipes sticking out of the ground. Incompleted project. The Tanglewood development off of Roop Street was supposed to have been built in three phases. Phase one got built. All of a sudden, it went bankrupt or something. It was the old former Buzzy Anderson Ranch. All of a sudden, phase two is not getting done. Phase three is not getting done. Somebody else has bought the land. I heard it was a bank now that owns it. And it still is vacant. What guarantee do we have if this project is approved will be completed from beginning to end?
There are no guarantees.
So we could end up with a half made projects again.
That's the nature of the business.
You guys don't have any control over that?
Not. I'm going to let the district attorney address that one. If the development code and the zoning code as what we're dealing with, when a project comes forward, we analyze that project and either say yay or nay to that project. We have no control over the market that drives those projects.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
I would vote nay. Thank you.
Just for your information, the project behind Kohl's was recently redesigned, and we approved a tentative map, and we anticipate that once their map is finalized, that they will move forward with development of that project.
So no more pipes out there?
Right.
Well, that'll be one blessing. Thank you.
Mr. Rotter.
Danny Rotter for the record. I just wanted to give some insight into some of the ways that the municipal code handles that. If it's a single-family residence or multifamily residential where you're going to have you're going to create multiple lots from one parcel, typically you have one of two ways you can go. The developer can build all of the infrastructure prior to recording the map and then selling the lots after they record it. Or they do what's called a bond, and they give us a guarantee from a title company or a bank or something. And that's what actually Shoals Ranch did. So Shoals Ranch, the first phase, we have a bond in place that they were able to record their final map. And if they failed, the city would be able to move in and take that bond and do whatever we needed to do, finish the roads, that sort of thing. But some of the projects, like the one behind Kohl's, was at one parcel. It was going to be apartments, I think, right? So they just came in and got a building permit. We didn't have any control over that because we don't bond building permits. So in some certain instances, we do have control over that, but in some instances, we don't.
But the I think her point is that we typically approve a project and then it doesn't go forward and, you know, the property lies dormant. And we have no control over what a developer does once he gets an approval. Other than, I mean, once he moves forward with the project, then we have lots of control through the bonding mechanism, through building permits, those kinds of things. But until he actually decides to move forward with the project, we can't say you must move forward. All we can do is say you can't develop until you meet certain requirements. Mr. Solano.
Well, it's all dependent upon the economy. If the economy is not good enough, a builder, a developer is not going to go forward with a project. There has to be a market for it, as was just said. So really, you can't expect that people are going to build things out prior to the need and the desire for housing or commercial or whatever it is. And that's the economy.
Okay. We have Ms. Flanagan.
On that note, if you look around Carson City, you see a whole lot of empty businesses. Why would we want to do a multi-use and put more businesses in the center of a very small area when we have everything on the outside of it empty? Why do we want to congest everything? I'm looking at the map over there, and I live on Appaloosa Court, and there's about, I don't know exactly, I didn't count them, but 800 lots, maybe. We're talking about putting 2,500 homes in one little area. And I understand that basically the Lompoc Estates is going to be about the last place that we can build anything because we just don't have any more room to grow. But why do we have to jam it full of multi-family units? I'm not saying that, you know, they're not going to be nice people and everything that are going to live there. However, we're having a problem with, we're starting to escalate with crime in Carson City. I don't want to continually project it by just jamming all these people in one area. It's a concern. It really is. I love this state. I know we have to change. I know I'm probably old-fashioned. We've got to move people in here. But, you know, at what price? For everyone that's been here in the past. So our quality of life has to be diminished because of it. I think we need to think about it before we just go approve of just jamming all kinds of apartment buildings and stuff in a small area. You look at what's there, it's 2,500 units. And I live in an area that has maybe 800 max. And I'm looking, and it's like, how is that going to happen? And when I'm looking at that, just visually, I'm saying, wow, there's going to be a lot of people living there. And we don't have any road. We don't have any infrastructures to move people. What if we had an emergency? I mean, how are you going to get all these people out of Carson City when there's only a couple of roads? So there's a lot more to think about. And since this is the last piece of land, I ask everyone to really, really hash this over and see what's good for the residents here. Because we've got, you know, I understand we need progress, we need people to move here, but we need to really, really think about it before we just go ahead and do something. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I'd like to thank you all for your comments. I will guarantee that they have been taken seriously. We are a body that is restricted in how it considers certain matters. We can only proceed in accordance with the city's development code and the standards that it sets for reviewing master plan amendments and zoning map amendments. But we can consider your comments in that review. So I guess at this point we'll.
I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
To staff.
Go ahead.
I've got a couple of silly things here.
Thank you, sir. There's some, in reading through this, there's some typos. If you look at page 33, under 22.4 or 22.4, B, the next to the last line says trees shall be a minimum of 1 inch caliper for deciduous and 6 feet for green, for evergreen. I don't think we're going to find any 6 foot caliber.
It's pretty tall.
Yeah. So I just think you just need to address that.
That's actually, if you'd like, we can add it. It's intended to be 6 feet in height, and
that's what I thought.
Consistent,
yeah,
with
just need
our
to say
landscape
so, though,
standards.
Because otherwise, they're going to be looking for a really big tree. then, on page 50,
before you go through it, but if there are typos, if there's really clarifications like that, just send
just
them to us.
Them.
I don't think we need to make it part of the motion. Yeah. I think if there's things that aren't anything that's not substantive, why don't you just send them to us? Have them fix it.
Okay. There's another one that at least you might want to know about so that you can fix it.
Well, just submit it to them.
It depends if it's
Is it a policy? Is it a policy issue or is it just a typo?
No, it's not. It's a minor item. It has to do with the size of planted trees.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we. Yeah, Mr. Raley, could you step forward, please? Yeah, well, probably a good idea to ask him. The staff report indicates that there are a number of revisions to your specific plan. Are you in agreement with those, and are those acceptable to you?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Thank you. If you're ready to make one, I'm ready. Well, we're going to consider the master plan amendment first.
Okay. I'm ready to make a motion. I move to adopt resolution number 2016-PC-R-2 recommending the Board of Supervisors approval of MPA-15-162, a master plan amendment from Blackstone Development Group. Property owners MTK Properties, LLC, Areas Family Trust, and Tom and Martha Keating Family Trust to create a new specific plan area for the north portion of the existing L'Opérant specific plan area on property located on the north side of East Fifth Street between Solomon Road and Airport Road, APNs 010-041-16-38-52-70-71 and 73, with the document revisions proposed by the staff and based on the findings contained in the staff report.
We have a motion and a second. At this point, I'd like to ask, does anybody want to go through each of the findings specifically, or are you satisfied that the findings are adequate and address the...
I have my findings question addressed, so I'm
good. Okay. Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion on this item? Hearing none, I'll take a vote. Those in favor of the master plan amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. It is 6 with one person absent. The master plan amendments require a two-thirds majority of the planning commission. 6 votes is definitely meets that two-thirds requirement. Yep.
Again, I move to approve the zoning map amendment recommending motion. I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of ZMA zoning map amendment 15-163, a zoning map amendment from Blackstone Development Group, property owners MTK Properties, LLC, Arias Family Trust and Tom and Martha Keating Family Trust to change the zoning from single family 1 acre in agriculture to single family 6,000, multifamily duplex, multifamily apartment, neighborhood business, and general commercial on property located on the north side of East Fifth Street between Solomon Road and Airport Road. APNs 010-041-1638-52-70-71 and 73 based on the findings contained in the staff report.
Second. We have a motion and a second from Mr. Salerno. Anyone have any issues or further discussion? Okay. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. 6-0 with one person absent.
And for the record, Mr. Chair, these items will both be heard by the Board of Supervisors at their meeting on March 17th.
Okay, thank you. And also for those in the audience, as projects come forward, you will have additional opportunity to address the more specific issues of traffic and noise and drainage and those kinds of items. So please, when you get your notice, and if you received a notice of this, you will receive notices for the additional projects going forward. So please participate in the future. Yes.
Additionally, I like hearing from everybody, so thank you for attending the meeting today. But if you didn't receive a notice and you're here, you know that the Planning Division and the Commission is subject to open meeting law, so they have to post agendas. They have to tell the public that we're going to be hearing these things. So if you have questions about where you can find agenda postings, I'm sure not to put more work on the Planning Division staff, but they can walk you through that, and I'm a little familiar too, and I'm approachable, so if you have questions, please let me know. Thank you for being part of the process.
Okay. So that wraps up the public hearing portion of our meeting. We'll move on to item G for staff reports. Mr. Plummel.
Thank you. Just really quick, at items that were before the Planning Commission previously, the Emerson Drive rezoning was approved on first reading. That's on Emerson Drive, north of College Parkway, from single-family 6,000 to neighborhood business. And then also at that meeting is not something that was recently before you, but there's a Ross, something that was before the Planning Commission a long time ago and approved. Ross Park development, a subdivision map that hasn't been done yet, but they got a one-year extension and they're in the works getting permits. It's on Snyder, so they're working with NDOT and getting permits for improvements, and within the next year should be under construction there as well.
That was improvements to the park, wasn't it?
It's just south of the park is the development. And Susan's going to go over the items for next month.
So the items for the Planning Commission meeting on March 30th, we will have four items. We have a modification to the Silver Oak Planned Unit Development for an additional phase 21 in the single-family residential area for 31 units. That is in the area that is west of Kmart, where the school was originally intended to go, but the school opted not to take that property. And so the developer's coming forward and proposing additional residential there. And then we've got the Clear Creek Avenue Church. If you'll remember, that was in front of the commission a couple months ago. They've met with the neighbors and done some modifications. They'll be back in front of you again. We have a billboard renewal. The billboard that is at Highway 50 and the I-580 interchange, the one on the northwest corner of that interchange. Just east of the Dottie's Casino. And finally, we have a special use permit for permanent signage and tents at the new used car center on the corner of Koontz and Carson Street. For additional permanent signage and in the form of banners and tents.
That's the old Toyota place?
Yeah.
Is that it? Okay. Commissioner comments or reports? Any commissioners have any comments or things they'd like to add?
I feel bad when people
turn your mic on, please.
I said I feel bad when people don't know the process and it's things that can be, you know, they can get involved in or be a part of with, like, the master plan.
Yeah.
So. Well, but that's it.
And interestingly, actually, it was back in 96, it was already on the plan to do something with the property.
Was it with that property? Yeah.
On top of that, who moves in next to a big vacant thing and doesn't
expect something?
At least
at some point.
I mean, seriously.
Okay. At this point, I'll entertain public comment. Anyone from the public wish to address any item that was not on the agenda? Seeing none, I will entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
A second?
I'll second. Sorry.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. Thank you all.
'm not sure I'm going to quote more than one or two, but